Okay. Discussing tonight the topic of adoption and halacha and Jewish law, and just before I start, I mean, let me just make a couple of disclaimers here. One is that I've never personally gone through this, so if I'm in any way insensitive to some of the issues or unknowledgeable about the practical issues of it, that's because I haven't gone through it firsthand. I have gone through it secondhand a couple of dozen times, insofar as the people that do this, many people that I know that do adopt, have come and discussed it with me beforehand or afterward, and so I'm pretty familiar with the issues on a secondhand level. Also, I'm speaking strictly from a Jewish law point of view. I'm not a psychologist, and I don't pretend to be one, so there might be some psychological factors here that are important that I'm not treating properly, and if there's any that you know of, so feel free to correct me. But again, I'm speaking from a halachic point of view. First of all, it's the first thing that always comes to my mind just before we get into an actual legal thing, but I think it has a lot of legal ramifications. Is the perspective on the idea of adopting a child. It seems to me that what happens here in America, when I say here I mean in America, is that there's kind of a run on kids. Like, a lot of people want to adopt children, and it, I don't know if everyone's familiar with this or not, but there's more people that want to adopt children than there are children to be adopted, especially if you want a specific type of child, whatever blood type it is that you're interested in. If you want a specific type of child, which we'll get into further, if that should be in our calculation, so then there's a shortage. So just an interesting point is that often what happens is if somebody will come over to me, or probably much more so to these agencies, and you know, feel like they want to do like a real big mitzvah, you know, and either because they don't have children, or even if they do have children, let's do a mitzvah and let's take a kid who's homeless and has no parents, and then nobody's willing to bring him up, and let me do something. Let me do this big mitzvah. I don't mind sharing my resources. I don't mind sharing my love. I don't mind sharing my home, my family, my television. I don't mind sharing these things with a child. Let me do this mitzvah. And then suddenly you're informed that, you know, haha, you think you're doing a mitzvah. Thousands and thousands of people want to do this, and you'll have to wait in line for at least 3 years, and it'll cost you who knows how many thousands of dollars to do it. And it's not at all simple. So what happens is that if you're in the area of adoption, we lose the perspective of the fact that it is a mitzvah. And I think this is very important. The fact of the matter is, no matter how difficult it is, and no matter how long you have to wait in line, it is a mitzvah, because ultimately what you're doing is taking a child who's homeless, and you're giving him a home. And this has to be one of the highest forms of charity that you can possibly do, because if a guy with a long white beard that looks like Moses comes and knocks on your door and asks you for charity, so you know, so you give him some money, and then you don't see him again, maybe you see him a year later, so it costs $18, it costs $36, you don't have to live with the guy necessarily, you don't have to deal with it on a day-to-day level. This is a commitment to really give over everything that you've got. I mean, you're talking about not just talking about money, you're talking about privacy, you're talking about love and feelings and emotions, and really share it with the person, because that's what the commitment is, to be not a Cinderella, but a real member of the family. And this is a big mitzvah, and the fact that you have to wait in line, and the fact that everybody wants to do it, doesn't make a less of a mitzvah, maybe makes it more of a mitzvah, because you have to work, you know, how many mitzvahs are there that you have to wait in line to do, and that you're willing to wait in line to do. So it makes it into even a bigger mitzvah. And the mitzvah is clear in the Torah that you have to, it's our obligation to take care of an orphan, and that's what the child is. The Talmud says, and this becomes a very significant remark, the Talmud says, "Kolamagadol yosim etef beisa kilu yaldo," and anybody that brings up an orphan in his house, it's as if he gave birth to him or her. this becomes halakhically significant. What exactly does this mean? This is if so, but superficially at least, we can understand that you're considered a parent. For practical purposes, you're considered a parent, and it is a form and a way of giving birth. It's not natural childbirth, right? And Lamaze doesn't help. But the fact of the matter is, it is a child, and it becomes your responsibility. And for that matter, the child has an obligation to honor you, exactly as the fifth commandment of the Torah describes. Tavidus avicha v'simecha, you should honor your father and your mother. This goes, to Thomas says, clearly on an adopted parent, just as it does on a natural parent. That's the first thing that the perspective that we have to, and with this perspective, I want to make a couple of halachic points. Before I make a halachic point, I just want to make one more social point, just because it's on my mind and really maybe out of my expertise and out of the context of this class. And that is that, in my experience, when someone does adopt a child, they begin a career of frustration socially. And what I mean by that is the following. There's always complaints about how other people are responding to the fact that I adopted a child. Now, somebody who's in an unusual, I'll explain to you what I mean. Somebody who's in the unusual circumstance of adopting a child, there's no question, these kind of things don't happen suddenly. A tremendous amount of thought has gone into it. There's even help groups that meet to discuss this, groups of parents that are getting into adopting, there's group therapy, there's counselors that specialize in this, there's social workers that specialize. This is a big thing to the person that's adopting. So the person who's never had any connection at all with adoption doesn't know anything about it, and has no idea and no knowledge at all of the feelings of the person that's adopted the child. So what happens is an awkward situation comes up, and I can tell you this, I'll tell you a story that happened with me within a period of 2 weeks. There's two adopting parents. There's two adopting parents right here in the city. One of them adopted a child, and a few weeks after they adopted the child, they came. They told me, they're just talking. They told me that they're very frustrated. They adopted this child, and nobody came over. Nobody said Mazel Tov. Nobody, they did everything that, they wanted. There was nobody made a baby shower. Nobody brought over gifts. Nobody did all the normal things that you do when a kid was born. And this parent was very, very upset. So I said to this person, and I believe it to be true, that you have to understand that people don't know how to respond to this kind of thing. They don't know how to react. This is not a usual situation. Well, what about common sense? There is no common sense. I'm probably closer to it than a lot of people, and I don't know how to react. who knows how to react to this kind of thing? Yet, a person, the parent who's adopting the child, has it so clear in his or her mind exactly how they want everyone to react, but nobody knows it. So just from a social point of view, and I've always wanted to say this, and this is the only place I can find to say it. From a social point of view, if somebody adopts a child, you have to understand that nobody knows what to do. And therefore, you have to be very forgiving. So the story was that exactly 2 weeks after somebody came with this frustration, that nobody came over and said Mazel Tov, another parent who adopted a child came over complaining how somebody came over and gave him a big Mazel Tov and a hug when they adopted a child. So they said, what are you complaining about? I mean, what did they make? They're making it, I don't know exactly what the complaint was, but they're making it like, I'm not a psychologist, but just an observer of the humanities. This person felt upset that people came over and said Mazel Tov as if to make it like it's a normal birth, being callous and underlining the fact that I myself can't give birth, and took it as a whole insulting thing. And here I'm thinking to myself, Rebbe Shloimeh, what are you supposed to do? Here's the guy 2 weeks ago was all upset. So I'm ready to tell everybody, listen, if somebody adopts a kid, say Mazel Tov. And here the person threw a wrench in the whole thing. So the answer is everyone has a different concept in their mind of how you're supposed to react and how the world's supposed to know. So just the suggestion is, let the people know. And there are ways, without saying so, to let people know how you consider whether you want to be wished malchus, if you don't want to, but certainly to be forgiving to people that don't know how to react. That's just my social point A. And from this, I want to get to a halachic point. By the way, what I just said is totally not grounded in halacha or anything to do with the Torah, just an opinion. Take it or leave it. The first question that comes to everybody's mind, every Jew's mind when it comes to adapting, is you adopt a Jewish child, right? And I think the answer that comes to everybody's mind is, sure, if you can, that's probably the best thing to do, right? If you're adopting a kid and you're Jewish, probably the smartest thing to do is to adopt a Jewish child. That would be the kind of an obvious question and answer. And I want to tell you that this is not so simple at all. And this is the first point. First of all, besides for the practical aspect of adopting a Jewish child, it's very, very difficult. Fortunately, I guess it's a nice statement about the Jewish people. There are very few Jewish children to be adopted, first of all. And to be in line for a Jewish child is maybe a 3 or 4 year longer line than to be in line for a non-Jewish child. This is the way it is. There seems to be this is a statistic. There seems to be an out of proportion yearning of Jewish parents to adapt, and a disproportionate amount, small amount of Jewish children to be adopted. Hence, you have a tremendous amount of competition. So there's a practical problem for it. Practical things, you deal with agencies and lawyers and things like that. From a halachic point of view, here's the issue. Very often when you adopt a Jewish child, once a child is Jewish, it comes with a whole set of baggage of problems. It's part of being Jewish. Right? The fact that the child is Jewish opens up a Pandora's box in terms of halacha. Because very often you don't know anything more about the child than the fact that the child is Jewish. So the first question you have to ask yourself in this case, here you got this baby, 2 days old, he's Jewish. First question you have to ask yourself is, what makes him Jewish? I say him, by the way, just as a convenience. What makes the child Jewish? How do you know? I mean, you have to have some kind of, brass tack proof that somebody's Jewish. So you say, well, his mother's Jewish. Who says his mother's Jewish? You never met his mother. They maybe won't even tell you the mother's name. Right? This is the policy of many adoption agents. They don't even tell you the mother's name. Who says the child is Jewish? Right? You really don't know. Halachically, it's not so simple that you can call somebody Jewish. Think about this and you'll agree with me immediately. It's not so simple that you call somebody Jewish just because somebody says so. In other words, if somebody is Jewish, there has to be a clear reason why you're Jewish, right? You have clear, everybody knows that I'm Jewish, my parents are Jewish. I converted, right? I have papers that say I'm Jewish. There has to be something, some clear way, some clear indication before you believe a person is Jewish. So you say, well, what's the difference? What the heck, let's call him a Jew? Not so simple. If you just go ahead and call him a Jew, if he's really not a Jew, so then what's going to happen? You're going to bring him up as a Jew. He's going to marry a non-Jew. Or he's going to marry another Jew, rather, and then if he's not Jewish, you've just caused an intermarriage, right? Which is not kosher. Once the person is Jewish, or you're calling him Jewish, you have to be 100% sure that he's Jewish. Another problem is that if the child is Jewish, let's assume even that you can prove that he's Jewish. You get a letter from a rabbi. Assuming that's a proof, you get a letter from a rabbi that the child's Jewish, but you still don't know who the child is. You don't know exactly what his name is. So here's another problem that could happen. You might say this is unlikely, but it might not be so unlikely. Let's say the child grows up and falls in love with his sister. Now, I've heard that this isn't uncommon if they happen to be in the same area, because obviously they have a lot in common, right? And they might not know. And that I know personally of a story of a brother and sister that got engaged. Frightening, huh? The story. When I say I know personally, I don't know the people, but there was a letter written to Rav Moshe Feinstein, and they got engaged, and then they realized, you know what? We're both adopted children, and isn't this a coincidence? And one to the other, and it came out that they were, I think, brother and sister, if not one relation further, that it was still forbidden. So what happens with a Jewish child is, if you have a Jewish child and you don't know who the child is, you have to know clearly, how are you going to go about, marrying the child off if you don't know who the child belongs to? So you get into, let's say the child's a Kohen. You don't know the child is a Kohen. If the child is a Kohen, then a Kohen is not allowed to marry, right? Everyone familiar with Kohen? Right? A Kohen, if the child's a Kohen, you're not allowed to marry a divorcee, right? You don't know who the child is. Maybe he's a Kohen, maybe he's not a Kohen. So, okay, most people aren't Kohanim. You can go back and forth, but it does open up a Pandora's box. And worst of all, and probably the biggest question of a Jewish child, one question is if he's Jewish altogether, is if the child is, and hear me out on this one, what we have to ask is the child a legitimate child? Because, and let me explain to you, even if you know what I want to explain to you, let me explain to you illegitimacy according to the Torah. An illegitimate child is called, in Torah language, a mamzer. Probably everybody's heard the term sometime or another, right? A mamzer. An illegitimate child in English, I believe, means a child that was born out of wedlock. Or at least it used to mean that. I think it changed. that became okay. In halacha, in Torah, a child born out of wedlock is not illegitimate. That's a perfectly legitimate child. There's nothing illegitimate about a child. A child who is born out of wedlock can marry the high priest, can marry the highest rabbi. Born out of wedlock is not a blemish at all, for lack of a better word, on a child. Might be a blemish on the parents, that we can argue about a different time, but at least for the child, it has no effect on the child. A child born out of wedlock is holy as the next guy. There's no problem with that. However, if a child is born out of the result of an adulterous affair, which means, in case you don't know, which means that, let's say, a woman had an affair while she was married to somebody, had an affair, and had a child, right? That child is a mamzer and is illegitimate and is not allowed to marry any other Jew. This is a heavy one. The only one he can marry is another mamzer. It's heavy on the child. It is heavy on the child. It's a very, I guess, I mean, I'm not here to explain this philosophically, and it's everybody, including me, has philosophical problems with it, but I guess, I mean, children are born with all kinds of handicaps. A child could be born with one leg. So a child is born with a handicap of being a mouse is a very heavy penalty on an irresponsible parent who has an affair during a marriage. Somebody who doesn't take that commitment serious. Now, for your this problem of a child being a mamzer, you might think, only applies to a certain group of people. Here's the problem. Let's say a woman is married to a man, and they have their chuppah and they have their this whole beautiful Jewish wedding. And then they get divorced, but they didn't get a proper get with me, because you have to get not only a civil divorce, but you have to get a religious divorce too. According to the Torah, if you got a civil divorce and you didn't get a religious divorce, a get, so you still marry. So now this woman, who is a woman of integrity, goes and she gets married to somebody else. What's actually happening here from a Torah point of view is she's having an affair with man B while she's still married to man 1, even though she's divorced, because she doesn't have a get. So what happens is that people, and this is why we get so hyper, that no matter what you do wrong, get a good get. in other words, if you don't want to keep Shabbos, don't keep Shabbos. That's your business. If you don't want to, if you don't want to keep kosher, don't keep kosher. That's your business. We encourage it. But if you don't want to get a get, try to get a get anyway, because a get could affect the future generations and create a mamzer, right? And the child could wake up one day and realize the child could become religious or even not become religious or want to marry somebody who's religious and you find out that the child is an illegitimate child and you scar the child. So under all circumstances, one should get a kosher get. Unfortunately, not everybody does get a kosher cattle. So what you're dealing with is a much bigger suspicion that a child could possibly be a mamzer. So now let's get back to our scenario. You go to the adoption agency, and they give you the child, and the child is Jewish. They tell you. Let's assume we believe them that the child is Jewish. where did he come from, right? I mean, there's a good chance, and let's speak honestly for a second, where did he come from? Obviously, there's a good chance that it didn't come from the best of families to begin with, right? It didn't come from, it didn't come from, what's the family on TV, you know, with the father, the mother, the dog, and, wasn't one of these perfect American dream families, right? Obviously, there's an unfortunate situation going on over here, and because it's a Jewish child, one has to really question, is this, without checking into the yichus, into the lineage of the child, you really have to know, am I getting a legitimate child, or am I getting into a very, very big problem? So what happens over here is that even though common sense and logic would tell you the minute you start thinking about adopting a child, the first thing that comes to mind is, get a Jewish kid. I'm Jewish, I want to get a Jewish kid. Rav Moshe Feinstein comes along and says, if you're gonna adopt a child, whatever you do, let it be a Gentile. Under all circumstances, let it be a Gentile. Please stay away from Jewish children, he says. It's an interesting thing because he even goes to say you shouldn't think for a second that the mitzvah of adopting in terms of taking an orphan into your home and helping them, that perspective that we want, shouldn't think for a second that it applies any less to a Gentile than it does to a Jew. It's the same mitzvah one way or the other. He says, his words, which are seldom, he told somebody who wrote to him, he says, please, don't create problems, adopt a Gentile child. Now, I'm not saying for sure that it's forbidden to adopt a Jewish child. I mean, somebody's got to adopt a Jewish child. But I'm saying that from looking at it selfishly, as to what kind of a problems you can anticipate in Jewish law, it's much cleaner with a Gentile. Now, what happens with a Gentile kid? The Gentile child has its own set of problems, which I'm going to discuss in a second. But in a nutshell, what you're going to do is you're going to get the Gentile child, you're going to convert the child. And now the child is Jewish, fresh, clean, just started his own lineage right now. And no questions, can't possibly be illegitimate, because there's no such thing as a Gentile child being illegitimate. There's no such thing as a Gentile mamzer. Doesn't it? You have to be Jewish to be a mamzer. You're quote me, though. You have to be Jewish to be a mamzer. So you're starting off, so with this Gentile kid, you're starting off very, very clean, and there's no question. He's not related to anybody in the whole world. You don't have to worry about him marrying his sister, marrying his brother, her brother, or cousins, or aunts, or uncles. You don't have to worry about anything like that, because the child's not related to any Jew, right? It's totally clean. I always think that the people that, from all the people that I deal with, the sometimes the ones I feel most secure with in terms of Judaism is converts, because I know a convert's a Jew. they have a paper to prove it. Everybody else is questionable. when you start thinking about who's Jewish and who isn't Jewish, I mean, it's mind-boggling when you think about the history that we went through and all kinds of stories. Maybe you don't hear as many stories as I hear, but when you hear stories, I told you that there's right now a big story. There's a Rebbe, a Hasidic Rebbe, in New York, who just discovered that he's not Jewish. but really, he's really not Jewish. I mean, not just the technicality. Didn't have a conservative conversion, didn't have a reform conversion, didn't have anything. Just simply non-Jewish, and he at one point got interested in Judaism, studied Judaism, and really got into it, and got into Kabbalah, and it got so into it that he was ashamed to say that he's not Jewish. And in order to convert, you have to get at least three rabbis that are going to know that you're not Jewish. And he was just ashamed to say, because he had sort of infiltrated these areas in order to learn Kabbalah and these things, sort of posing as a Jew, and he was never in a situation where he could say he was Jewish. And here you have a Hasidic Rebbe with 11 kids. and all of a sudden, the whole story, he got into some kind of an accident, and they're looking through his papers and called a long-lost relative to find out his social security number. And one thing led to the other, and his parents are Roman Catholic, and he never went through any kind of conversion whatsoever. So you know, when you hear these things that happen every day, we're living in a very confused generation. Sometimes I look at a convert and I say, no, at least I know for sure I got a real minion. there's no question. There's no question of God, and that's really what we're dealing with over here. I think that if you can find a Jewish child, and if you can insist somehow that the research be done, and you know exactly who that child is, under those conditions, in other words, the agencies or whoever is that's dealing with it, and I want to talk more about this in a second, if they can waive the rules, and you can find out who it is that you're adopting, so then, is it a bigger mitzvah to adopt? I don't know if it's a bigger mitzvah, but there's another added mitzvah that you're bringing home a lost Jew, right? Who might end up being adopted by a Gentile, and here you have a bigger problem, maybe of a Jewish child being brought up as a Gentile. Is that a bigger problem than a Gentile child being brought up as a Jew? Conversion gets you out of being a non-Jew, but it doesn't get you out of being a non-Jew. It's the opposite. The fact that you're a 50% chance that you're a Jew. I have this electronic network that I'm on, and I've become an electronic rabbi of of a couple of thousand people throughout the country. So it's an interesting thing. I get letters, electronic letters over the computer. I get letters from all over the place. And a fellow wrote me yesterday. First he wrote me a letter to say that he wants to write me a letter because he's too embarrassed to speak to anybody that he knows, any rabbi that he knows about this. And if I would be willing to help him, he'll write me another letter. So I wrote him back that, you know, of course, if I can help you, I'll help you. And I already guessed what the issue was. So yesterday I got his letter, and he said, Dear Rabbi Haber, am I Jewish? This was his opening line. And he said that never thought about it until recently. But his father is Jewish, his mother wasn't, pretty clear. But he knows that he had a circumcision when he was 8 days old. And he knows that when he was 6 years old, they made him go into a mikveh, right, and do a triple immersion, as he put it. And then he went to Hebrew school and studied for his bar mitzvah and said his haftorah and shul, and never in his conservative synagogue. And he never gave it much thought, and then his father died, so he started going to the synagogue every day to say Kaddish, and he says he's often the tenth man, and every time he's the tenth man in the minyan, he thinks to himself, wow, am I Jewish, or am I just messing all these people up to think that I'm Jewish, and I'm not Jewish, right? So and he said he's never discussed questions here, because on the one hand, the obvious thing is, what would you say? He believed himself to be a Jew. Oh, so the question is, was that conversion a legitimate conversion or not? Now, here's the catch with conversion, and the reason I'm telling you this story is because it's very applicable over here too. The way it works to convert a child, how do you convert a little child? So we don't do any, there's no such thing in Judaism as these maps, baptismals or proselytations or forced conversions. But on the same token, we do convert little children, mostly in the case of adoption. So what happens is, let's say it's a boy. When the boy is 8 days old, you do a bris on the child. And instead of making the regular bracha that you would make at a bris, you make another bracha that you make at the bris of a convert. You know what I'm saying? In other words, when a person converts, a 30-year-old, a 40-year-old, so when they are circumcised, so you make a different blessing than the blessing you make when you just have a baby and do a circumcision. So when the child is 8 days old, you do the circumcision, and depending on what your pediatrician advises, you immerse the child in a mikveh, which is the second part. There's three parts to conversion. The second part of conversion is immersing in a mikveh, a kosher mikveh, in front of a tribunal court, three rabbis. So usually a pediatrician will say 2 years old, let's say, because you've got to immerse the child totally underwater, so he's got to be able to hold his breath and all that, you know. now pediatricians are saying it's better 3 weeks, you know, do it right away. Whatever, you know, whatever the doctor says, it doesn't make any difference from a halakhic point of view. But at some point, this fellow in the letter was at age six. So his doctor was very machmir, was stringent. But you immerse the child in a mikvah, so that's that part of the conversion done. And then you have part three, that in order to convert, you have to accept, and this is the main part of a conversion, you have to make a commitment and accept the mitzvahs, right? In other words, you have to be told clearly that, that you know, you don't have to do this, and you don't have to become Jewish, and you might be even better off being non-Jewish, it's easier. And that part of the conversion process is to tell the person that you don't have to do that, and make sure, ascertain that they understand what they're getting into and that they're making a sincere commitment to it. And then when the convert accepts that, and in the minds of the rabbis, this is a sincere and knowledgeable, not an ignorant acceptance and commitment, so then the conversion is complete. So in an adult, this all happens in the same hour and a half, the bris and the mikvah and the acceptance of the mitzvahs. With a child, the bris you can do at 8 days old. With the immersion, you can do at 2 years old. What happens to the child making this choice for himself, whether he wants to become Jewish or not? Remember, you can't convert somebody by force. There's no such thing as converting somebody by force, including a little child. So you can't, the poor kid can't just be converted. You know, I was converted. He has to want to convert. So what happens is, as soon as he becomes of age, at 13 years old, or for a girl at 12 years old, you have to ask him or her and say, look, you're a converted Jew, and your conversion was never completed. And now it's up to you to decide. Do you want to accept Judaism or don't you? Now, I can tell you that this is a pretty heavy situation, because what are you going to do if the kid says no? Say, oh, I was only joking.
What age are we asking?
13 years old. If the child says no, then we have to be straightforward. The kid isn't Jewish. It's as simple as that.
At a later time, does that be a change?
No. I mean, in other words, the way it works is this, that when the child finds out as an adult that he's a convert, so his decision at that time is binding, either yes or no. Now, if you don't find out until you're 80 years old that you're a convert, right? Your adopted parents never told you. If you don't find out, now this is wrong, because he's never converted. He's never completed the conversion. So he's not Jewish up until that point. But let's say at 80 years old, you're going through the family records, and you find out that Oya was adopted and Oya was converted, and I actually have a choice. At 80 years old, you say, I don't want. I don't want this, so you're not Jewish. At 80 years old, you say yes. Whenever you find out as an adult that you're in the middle of a conversion process, your decision at that time is binding. So my question has to be for this fellow who wrote me on the electronic net is, did you decide as an adult when you found out that you were in the middle of a conversion process, did you decide that you don't want to be a Jew? Because that was what he indicated, actually, that on the one hand, he doesn't want to be Jewish. It's too hard. On the other hand, how could he turn his back on his father, who he's saying Kaddish for, and renounce this? This was his dilemma. So the question from a halakhic point of view has to be, when you found this out, when you realized this, what did you say? And if you didn't say anything, don't say anything, because learn more and find out what you should say. I mean, in other words, get both sides. But in terms of adoption and adopting, this is a very, very real issue. Everybody who adopts a non-Jewish child has to consider the fact that they have to put the child through the conversion process. And best thing to do, best halakhic thing to do if you want the kid to be Jewish is at age 13 or age 12 for a girl, is to ask the child to give the child his choice of whether he wants to be Jewish or doesn't want to be Jewish. And if you don't do this, then the child never becomes Jewish. And if you do it, you run the risk at a very practical level of the child saying, no, I don't want to be Jewish. Okay, this is not so simple. What Phil is talking about is that there's kind of a trick that's used to get out of this. And that is, that's for sure not good enough, just the fact that he's doing it. What they do sometimes is the kid is a convert and they don't want to really give him the choice. So what they do is the guy who writes his bar mitzvah speech puts in there, I'm happy to be a Jew, I want to be a Jew, and I always want to be a part of the speech. So now that he said it and he's stuck. This is what it, you know, the kid doesn't even know what he's saying, does it? You know, who wrote the speech? Oh, I bought it from mail order Converse, special for Converse, a bar mitzvah speech for Converse, you know, that you accept Judaism. He doesn't realize he's accepting Judaism. First of all, it's very questionable in halacha whether this is good enough. Second of all, you have to question whether it's right. If the kid has a choice, so the kid has a choice. So, you know, from an integrity point of view, you should give the kid the choice. In other words, we are not, you have to understand something. Whether it's an adopted child or just a, we're not in the business of making converts. We're not in the business of proselytizing. And we don't encourage conversion. Why don't we encourage conversion? Because we have to know for sure that it's sincere. And if you encourage it, you don't know if it's sincere, right? If somebody comes on their own and they push it. So it's not that we don't want people to be Jewish. We do want people to be Jewish. But the only way to test sincerity is by not encouraging conversion, right? That's understandable. So there's no difference with the adopted child. And you have to really put the child through the same procedure that you would put any convert and say, look, we have to know that you're sincere about this because this is a conversion like any other conversion. And it's true what you're saying, that if you see the kid is sincere, right, the kid goes to yeshiva and he davens Shemona Esrei for an hour at a time and he loves to study Torah and he studies into the wee hours, you see that he's sincere. So then, okay, if you put it into the bar mitzvah speech and you see that he's so sincere and he says it, good enough. But what are you going to do with your regular run-of-the-mill America, made in USA kid who is not that kind of a kid? He's a kid that goes to public high school, right? Maybe he goes to Nichols or to Calisanctius or to one of these things, and he's not showing tremendous observance necessarily. On the other hand, he goes to USY or something, and he's showing that he has some Jewish identity. Here, you don't see the same level of commitment, and you don't see the same level of earnestness and zealousness that you see in this frumy kid. So it's not all that simple that the conversion is a conversion, even if he says so. Even if he says that, yes, I want to be Jewish, it's not so clear if he's not going to act the part. So what you need is not only a yes, for the most part, what you need is a real commitment from the kid. And this is the downside of adopting the non-Jewish child. You know what I'm saying? Just to have to go through this conversion process.
No.
I mean, what's a legal conversion if he doesn't live it? Now, we're getting an aliyah is a bar mitzvah. Getting an aliyah is not a conversion. And the child's not Jewish. I guess it's kind of a... If the kid says it, we can't judge people's hearts as to whether they're sincere or not sincere. And it's difficult. Most rabbis that I know, most Orthodox rabbis, will do everything in their power not to do a conversion. I don't mean to say that they'll try to get somebody else to do it. Most rabbis don't want to do a conversion. I'm a youngster. I'm a kid. I've been a rabbi for 9 years, and I did one, and it was such a special case that I did it, and I want to tell you something. I don't know if I was ready to be hospitalized after the amount of responsibility of knowing that somebody is sincere. I mean, you look what you're saying. You're saying the generations and generations of people are Jewish. If I'm going to go ahead and make a conversion, I'm going to say that your daughter can marry my son. It's as simple as that. There's no difference between us. We're 100%. So, and that's what conversion is. It's a very, very powerful thing. I mean, there's no, once somebody's Jewish, there's absolutely no prejudice in this. I mean, it's a 100% the same thing. Nobody differentiates, at least in the Orthodox world. So it's heavy. And to know what's going on inside somebody's heart, and to know that the commitment is a real commitment, and to know that it's sincere, and to know that they can hold to a commitment, and they know enough for a commitment, it's really very, very heavy. So, you know, if you say, well, if the kid says it, what do we do? I mean, the answer is it's up to the rabbi to decide whether it was sincere or not sincere, or whether he wants to sort of pass it as a conversion or not pass it as a conversion at that time. But judging from what goes on and the amount that rabbis try to stay away from these things that are kind of shaky, I don't think it would work. In other words, if a kid is not Shomer Shabbos and doesn't keep kosher and this and that and says, I'm glad to be a Jew, it's very nice, glad to be a Jew. You know what I mean? But you know, he's not really doing anything. The other thing is, I don't know if the child really understands. I mean, how can you make a commitment to something if you don't know what you're making a commitment to? So here's which brings me to another point, that if one, no matter what your level of observance is, if you adopt the Gentile child and want to convert that child, there's an obligation besides for the regular obligation of teaching your child Torah. You have a special obligation to teach the child Torah because this is part of the conversion process. In other words, everybody who wants to convert understands that you can't convert unless you understand Judaism. How can you decide you want to convert or not if you haven't studied Judaism? So this is an obligation on a parent besides for the religious obligation, simple ethical obligation, that you're putting your child through a conversion process, you have to teach the kid Torah. So it's kind of difficult any way you do it. That's the point I wanted to make. Let me go to the next thing unless there's any questions. You know, there's a big controversy as to whether you should tell a child that he's adopted or not. So it's a controversy among psychologists, and if to tell him, when to tell him. Many people, I think it's getting a little bit old-fashioned, thank God. Many people feel that, you know, you shouldn't tell the child that he's adopted. What does he have to go through that strain of thinking that he's adopted? Let him just be, you know. So if he has the question in his mind, you know, why am I black and you're white? So you tell him, like, you know. Yeah, I had a great uncle that was. But if at all possible, the tendency is to refrain from telling the child that he's an adopted kid. Now, I maintain that halachically, this is absolutely wrong. And if the same psychologists that say that it's not good for the child should be able to give advice as to how to make it good for the child and how to let the child deal with it. First of all, if we go back to the original statement of putting this thing in perspective here, what we're doing here is a mitzvah of taking in an orphan into our house. We're doing a big mitzvah. Certainly not anything to be ashamed of, right? Something to be very, very proud of. Not saying you have to push the point. And again, I gave this disclaimer at the beginning. I'm not a psychologist. I'm not saying that you have to push the point and tell everybody, yeah, how do you like my yosemite, you know, my little orphan here. I'm not saying that. I'm not saying that it has to be underlined. But I think that if we have the perspective of the fact that we're all doing the mitzvah here, I'm taking care of you, you're being taken care of, and we have a very fine and loving relationship, I don't see psychologically what's so terrible about telling the child. But from a halachic point of view, it's like this. If the child was a Gentile and you're converting them, so how are you going to explain to your kid that you're converting him if you don't tell him that he's adopted, right? So obviously you have to tell a Gentile child that he's adopted. There's no question about it. And obviously you have to tell him by the time he's 12 or 13 years old, or to answer your question, in certain cases where you feel that he's not mature enough to make a decision at that point, you can stretch it a little bit. But you got to remember the danger that if he finds out that he's going through a conversion process, then his first decision is binding once he's 13 years old. So it's not too healthy of a situation.
So you don't let him know he's going through a conversion process?
Well, I'm saying if someone judges that I don't want to let him, I want to let him know, but not now. Let me wait a couple of years. Then the danger is that if he does find out and he says, well, what the heck, I don't want to be Jewish, so then he's not Jewish. So you got to be careful with that, because once you're 13, you count the ticks on the clock. If somebody should come along and tell him, or he should find a piece of paper, or he finds out, you know, you get intelligent when you get 13, 14 years old.
You
become inquisitive.
You don't tell him until you feel like it's ready.
Well, if you don't have to, but if you don't, you run the danger, I'm saying, of him finding out himself and then making his own decision, which will be binding. That's what I'm saying. So I'm saying you should tell him.
And
probably a psychologist will tell you not to spring it on a kid for the first time when he's 13 years old, you know, tomorrow is your bar mitzvah, you're not Jewish, you're adopted. You know, and the reason why your name is on the napkin's different is, you know, that's not usually the proper cycle. I would guess that common sense would say that's not what the cycle is. So if the child's not Jewish and you're going to have to tell him eventually, probably the healthiest thing to do is to bring him up with the idea that he's adopted, so it's never a shock, and it's never something where he's going to feel like second fiddle or not loved and all that. Let him be brought up with the idea. Let it be second nature to him. That's first of all. Second of all, a Gentile, and let me put it to you this way, a convert has an obligation to honor his father and mother, and this gets us into another problem, just as much as a Jew, which means that, and I know that there's people that misunderstand this, and it's clear in the Talmud, that if a Gentile converts, the obligation for them to honor their natural father and mother is just as powerful as if they were born Jewish and there was no conversion, and according to the Talmud, even more powerful, because there's a mitzvah of Kiddush Hashem, of you're acting like a Jew now, so you have even a bigger obligation to honor your father and mother. So in general, we should understand this, that as much as technically a convert is like a newborn child, he still has an obligation to honor his father and his mother. I believe that if a child who was never even raised by his parents does have an obligation to honor his parents, that there's a clear obligation for a person, an adopted child, to honor his parents. And whether he's Jewish or whether he's not Jewish or whether he's converted, that obligation exists. So what we have to question is, and Rav Moshe Feinstein writes about this and makes the same point, is do we have the right to take away the mitzvah, assuming that we know who the natural parents are, do we have the right to take away the mitzvah of kibud av v'aim, honoring your father and mother, from this adopted child and withhold from him the information? So the Talmud says clearly, Asur l'ashkiach shem hayosim. You're not allowed to hold back from an orphan, what his original name was. It's very important that he's able to have a respectful relationship with his parents wherever possible. And I know this gets into a lot of, I'm not naive to the fact this gets into a whole host of practical problems, but nevertheless, that is the halacha. For instance, if a Jewish child, an adopted Jewish child, was adopted and then is raised by Jewish parents, not by his natural Jewish parents, if he gets noticed, or even if he doesn't get noticed, that one of his parents died, he has to say Kaddish. And he has to sit Shiva. He has to mourn for him, right? That's his parents. That's his natural parents. It doesn't say, if your parents brought you up, you have to mourn for them. The fact that you're born to your parents is enough, right? Your mother still wants your labor, right? You know, it's still a parent, and you have to mourn for that parent. There's no excuse not to mourn. So if it's a Jewish child, you certainly have to tell him that he's adopted, so that he can properly and try to find out, which we said at the beginning. Anyways, you have to try to find out where the child comes from, and the connection should be established at some point. Now, it's up to the individual, obviously, when you want to establish this, but probably, again, so it shouldn't be shocking, it should be done at an early stage, and because halakhically, this child still has obligations to his natural parents. And I think this can be dealt with in a healthy way. A Gentile, you have to tell him, first of all, because he also has obligations to his parents, if you know them, and second of all, because you have to tell him so that he has converted. So there's really, any way you look at it, there's no situation where you wouldn't tell a child that he's adopted. Everybody with me? It's not an obligation, it's a mitzvah. In other words, you could say Kaddish for anybody. So it's a proper thing to do, to say Kaddish for somebody that you know, that took care of you, like a parent. Well, the first question is, when do you tell him that he's adopted? If you ask me my opinion, I think he should be brought up with that. I mean, that's my opinion. Not take it or leave it. You have to tell him by the time he converts, and you probably want to tell him, so it's not a shock, you probably want to tell him, you know, at least a year in advance. I mean, you know, so that it's not, you know, try to tell them gradually somehow. But it's my opinion that the earlier the better. In general, with a kid, the earlier the better. But here's the story. A Rebbe, another Rebbe. Gotta watch the Rebbes. But there was a Rebbe who became a rabbi, was in Europe and survived the Holocaust. The true story. Survived the Holocaust, and his father was a rabbi of a certain town. And he himself was, I think he was saved by a Swiss Gentile family who found him in the forest and brought him into their house. He wasn't a little baby in the forest, but he was already, they found him running away. They brought him to her house, and they kept him in the house, and they hid there for a few years. And the fellow who was from Guy developed a relationship with the young woman of the house, and who wasn't Jewish. And here's this guy, the Rebbe's son, having the relationship with this girl in Switzerland who wasn't Jewish. And he taught her all about Judaism and taught her even how to speak Yiddish and taught her everything that there is to know about Judaism. And there was no situation in Switzerland where she could actually convert so they can get married. So they decided that they're going to get to America after the war. And the first thing they're going to do is they're going to, she's going to convert. And then they're going to get married, and they will live happily ever after. So he came off the boat with this girl, and to his surprise, there was a whole delegation there to meet him, a whole group, because his father was a Rebbe, and they heard that he was coming. He thought that he was a nobody, but he was somebody. And there was maybe 60-70 people at the shipyard there to meet this Rebbe coming off the boat, and he introduces my Kala, right? This is my fiance, and what's he going to say? She's not Jewish, right? So he didn't say anything. And again, too embarrassed to ever say to anybody that she's not Jewish, and she was too embarrassed, so they decided she spoke Yiddish, so they decided sort of like, I don't know how they rationalized it, that they'll just leave it, and they went ahead, they got married with a proper Hasidic wedding, and they danced with the kerchief, and they had a whole host of sons. And what I heard was a total of 36 grandchildren. 36 grandchildren, none of whom are Jewish. Also, none of whom speak English. They all speak Yiddish only, and they run around one of the areas of Brooklyn. Hasidic kids. The Rebbe, who's an old man, had an argument with one of the guys at his shul, which isn't common, and the guy all of a sudden spilled out in revenge of his Rebbe this whole story that somehow or another he knew about the Rebbe, that the Rebbe married a non-Jew. And they made a whole thing about it, and a whole research about it, and it came out that it's true that the Rebbe's wife, the Rebbetzin isn't Jewish, and the kids aren't Jewish, and the grandchildren aren't Jewish, and the grandchildren were starting at an age to getting married. So what's to do? They came to Moshe Feinstein. There's nothing to do. What are you going to do? You got to make a mass conversion here, right? it's like but we're like Baptists, just go and convert the whole clan, little kids with payas and all, then convert them all. And that's what they did. I mean, it was a 1-2-3 process, because, obviously, like you said, they were all from, and they explained that they went through the process until it came to one of the grandchildren, an 18-year-old. He says, no way. I have a choice. I don't want it, right? So they said, Laser, you're at this kid English. You don't even speak English. What do you want? What are you going to do? He says, I'll learn how to. And he went out, and he went to McDonald's, and he bought himself a cheeseburger, and he was happy, That was the end of it. That was the end of it. If I've got a choice, what do I need to hassle for? So, what do we learn from this? I'm not sure, but it's a good story.
Don't hang around Brooklyn.
Yeah, watch out. Watch out with those guys. But, okay, good. I think we've pretty much tied up the issues, unless there's any questions. That's it. I say Jews are Gentiles, and Gentiles are Jews, and your mamash don't know who we're dealing with anymore. And if we're going to adopt or encourage adoption or get involved with adoption, we shouldn't add to the confusion. I sincerely believe there'll come a time in Israel that all of us, maybe except with the exception of the converts, will do a token conversion. Just for the sake, I once, in a hysterical moment, I thought of proposing this in a scholarly magazine. that we should all do a token conversion and just go through the process just to make it clear, to make sure once and for all, because who knows what's going on. Of course, with me, there's no question. Because it's true. Because
you've researched that.
No, well, you see, my mother's a Spartan. So if you're Spartan, so it's a whole different ballgame. Right? I mean, you know, we didn't go through. You know, my grandfather was a rabbi of Istanbul. My great grandfather was the rabbi of Istanbul. My great great grandfather was the rabbi of Istanbul. I mean, what could have gone wrong? So the three generations before that, I I'm considering Istanbul. I'm trying to figure out if it's a step up or a step down. The snow, there's not as much snow in Istanbul.